Good morning, Portland. I'm Dave Mazza, and you're listening to Oregon Issues. We have this morning a fellow who's certainly cast his share of ripples in the political pond here in the state and on a number of issues. But today we're going to be talking campaign finance reform with attorney Dan Meek. And good morning, Dan. Thanks for coming down this morning.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Well, you know, big issue to talk about. Let's jump into it. And I guess let's start with a little background. I mean, this is not a new issue. We've been down this road quite a bit. Maybe you could give folks a little bit of a quick primer on how things have gone in terms of campaign finance reform in the state.
Sure. Oregon is currently one of only five states in the United States with no limits on political contributions to in candidate races, that is, races for state and local public office. One result of that is that the amount of money that is contributed and used by politicians over the past 10 years has increased by more than a factor of 10. We Oregonians actually did enact limits on political contributions back in 1994. You may remember that as ballot measure 9 of 1994. Mm-hmm. And it won by a vote of 72%. It banned all corporate contributions and all union contributions to candidate races in Oregon, and put a limit on individual contributions of $500 in a statewide race, primary and general, considered separately, $100 for races for the legislature. Those limits were only in effect for one election cycle. That was 1996. And then in early 1997, the Oregon Supreme Court decided that the Oregon Constitution does not allow any limits on political contributions, even though the U.S. Constitution does. Since then, of course, the U.S. Supreme Court has repeatedly upheld limits on political contributions, most recently Missouri in 2000 and the revised McCain-Feingold limits that the U.S. Supreme Court upheld in 2003. So that has left us since 1997 with no limits, and that's why the amount of money spent on political campaigns in Oregon has increased from $4 million to almost about $50 million in each cycle.
I was going to say there's the clear effect there of it just skyrocketing up to that incredible figure in 2002, mm-hmm. of $42 million. And I guess it's good to remind folks that basically what's currently allowed is pretty much the same of what they went after Tom DeLay for doing, right?
Well, the interesting thing about Tom DeLay, now that he just yesterday or the day before, exited stage right, as he said, from the House of Representatives. He always exits stage right, he said. Kind of like, remember, Snagglepuss in the old, was that Huckleberry Hound cartoons?
I think so, yeah.
I guess the dog was blue. He was the Huckleberry. That was his name. But now that Tom DeLay has left, he might want to follow his... one of his mentors, Ken Lay, and head on out to Oregon. Oregon was so good to Ken Lay with enormous extra billions of dollars of profits and $800 million of phony taxes that Ken Lay was able to impose on Oregonians through Portland General Electric. You know, Tom DeLay would really fit in quite well here, because what he was accused of doing and is accused and indicted in Texas for doing is perfectly legal in Oregon. What he was indicted for is merely arranging for $190,000 of money from corporations to go to support candidates for the Texas legislature. Well, that's perfectly legal in Oregon. In fact, in Oregon, it wouldn't even be noticed. Each of the last several election cycles, the corporations in Oregon have contributed 100 times that amount to candidates in Oregon. So what Tom DeLay is accused of doing wouldn't amount to even 1/100th of the corporate political contributions that we have in Oregon. So Tom DeLay would find Oregon to be quite copacetic.
Yeah, I know in the working with both organized labor and environmental groups in the early 90s, late 80s and early 90s, a state legislative race would have been considered fairly spendy if the candidate ended up spending $20,000, and now we're we're looking at, for a state house race, something around $250,000.
Yeah, in the last cycle, in fact, the last two cycles, half of the folks who won state senate races spent more than $500,000 each. So $500,000 is basically the baseline now for a contested senate race where there is some relative balance between Republicans and Democratic registration. A house race, you're basically getting to a platform or of about $250,000 to $300,000. And these are races that are, the house races are typically won with 1,500 votes.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about 15 bucks a vote. It's very expensive.
We have the best priced, the most valuable votes in the country, I guess.
I mean, well, the folks, you could actually go hand out $10 bills to everybody, and it would cost less if you could, you know, reliably buy votes that way. Instead, what you have to do is use radio, use television, and use those. In the last couple cycles, I've seen these in legislative races. Every day I get giant postcards in the mail, and they seem to be, you know, produced nationally. They're kind of national templates,
mm-hmm.
and they say nothing. The postcard says, you know, tell my opponent to stop lying, that sort of thing. Very little content, or just a picture of the candidate with his, you know, with his family and his dog, and you know why he or she is such a great person. But unfortunately, what happens is that this does have an effect on the outcome of races. In the Oregon legislature, last three cycles, 92% of the time, the candidate who spent the most money won, and the exceptions really are where the winning candidate was barely outspent by the loser, and the winning candidate already had some name recognition by being a former member of the legislature. So the idea that you can have a grassroots maverick campaign for the Oregon legislature just isn't true anymore.
And the people who are obviously having this influence, it's not like a large number of small business people who are pooling their resources. In fact, it's a handful of people making very large contributions that are...
It is. It's mainly the large corporations. It's the utilities. It's the banks. It's the timber companies.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one association of relatively small businesses, although there are some large ones there, and that's the Oregon Restaurant Association, which typically last three election cycles has contributed about $1.5 million to Oregon candidates and has been richly rewarded in the form of grossly overpaid lot commissions on video poker and line games for their constituents. The little delis that have these the gambling outlets are mm-hmm. members of the Restaurant Association and are making an extra $100 million a year at this point above and beyond what they should be paid by the in lottery commissions. Canadian provinces have pretty much the same system. They pay half of the commissions that we do here in Oregon, but then again, in Canada, elections, you know, there are not unlimited private political contributions in Canada.
Up of the trough, you
right.
know.
Overall, you might think that the corporate contributions will be offset by labor, but that's just not the case. In Oregon, the corporations have routinely and consistently outspent labor by 5-1. And, of course, they outspend environmental causes and social justice causes by incalculable ratios, hundreds to one. Not only do corporations dominate the scene in Oregon, but where the corporations themselves don't make contributions, the corporate executives do. You know, we thought that Lauren Parks, who is, of course, the president of a medical equipment company, we thought he was sort of over the top in 2002 when he contributed $540,000 to the Kevin Mannix campaign for governor. But he topped himself this time. He contributed $713,000 to Mannix and gave $170,000 to run an independent expenditure campaign against Ron Saxton. Of course, Mannix had his own problem with big donors because mm-hmm. the Grand Ron tribe, who run the Spirit Mountain Casino, it's about 75 miles or so southwest of Portland, reportedly spent $820,000 against Kevin Mannix and against Ted Kulongoski. Because they are not against having a new new Warm Springs casino, which would be in Cascade Locks, about 35 miles east of Portland.
Right.
So it's just a clash between gambling interests about one casino against another, but nevertheless that kind of spending pretty much dominated the race for governor.
It seems too that. To me, that has it dropped off the independent expenditure campaigns? Have those become a less used tool, or I'm just not catching them as much as I used to?
In Oregon, well, you may recall on the federal level, those campaigns are brought to us by groups called the 527 groups, named after a section of the IRS code, and you'll mm-hmm. of course recall the so-called Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. In Oregon, there isn't much reason to have independent campaigns because there's no limits on contributions. If you want to support a candidate, you can contribute $1 million to the candidate, as Lauren Parks has just about done. You can run your own independent campaign, but in Oregon, those are only done primarily when the funder thinks he has greater political astuteness than the candidate or the candidate's organization. And sometimes that's the case with Lauren. He thinks he can produce better ads or harder hitting ads than the candidate himself or herself would produce. And while these folks are, of course, out there making the big contributions, the average person is totally left out.
Right.
About 85.5% of Oregon voters in the 2002 cycle, where we have data, contributed absolutely nothing to campaigns. And let's say that you made a $50 contribution to a legislative campaign. You might think, well, I'm really in there. I'm really a player. But only 2% of all of the money for legislative candidates came from contributions of $50 or less. So 98% of the money came from larger donors. In fact, 70% of the money came from just about 1,100 donors, and their contributions averaged $6,700 each. So over two-thirds of the money is coming from big donors.
And of course, the end result of this is obviously the agendas that our legislatures are dealing with are much more concerned with the folks bringing in the big bucks rather than the average person. I mean, if we look at some of the things that have been going on, like the corporate kicker and the refusal to deal with that, and the tax issue and what have you.
Well, one amazing thing is that our Oregon utilities are still charging us over $100 million a year for phony income taxes that they're not paying. It's still in our electric and gas rates. An easy example is the corporate income tax in Oregon. Back in the 1970s, the corporations paid nearly 20% of all income taxes, state income taxes in Oregon. Now they're down to 4%, and that number is going down because of the corporate kicker. The corporate income tax this year is going to be cut another 36% because of the kicker, and next year it's expected to be cut 54% because of the kicker. So the Oregon income taxes on corporations have gone way down. There are other reasons they've gone down besides the kicker. The way they're calculated has gone down at the urging of the corporations. So basically, there's an organization called the Council. Let me find this. It's called the Council on State Taxation.
Mm-hmm.
It's run and funded by businesses, and its function is to, assemble tax information about all the states, so that it can advise corporations to go to their state governments and say, if you don't reduce my taxes, I'm moving somewhere else. I'm moving to the lower tax state. Well, they have found consistently that Oregon is just about the state with the lightest taxes on corporations of any state in America. The latest study from 2005 ranks Oregon 47th among states in business taxes per dollar of economic activity, ranks Oregon 49th in business tax burden relative to individual tax burden. In other words, the corporations have succeeded in getting taxes in Oregon shifted basically onto individuals and to a large extent upon lower income individuals. Oregon now has the second highest income tax in the United States on a family of four functioning at 125% of the poverty line.
That's an incredibly unprogressive.
That's right, and
unprogressive,
of course,
income tax.
As we saw a few minutes ago, those folks don't make campaign contributions.
Right,
and when you go down to the legislature, it's quite clear that the legislators are all extremely fearful under the present system of offending even a single large corporation. Offending even one large corporation, they know that they can be taken out, because that corporation has no limits on what they can contribute to that person's opponent or to any independent campaign they may wish to run against that candidate.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just jump in here and let folks know who are just now tuning in that you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Dave Mazza, and this is Oregon Issues. And we're talking with Dan Meek regarding campaign finance reform and the dire situation we find our current election system in due to the being awash in money. So how much are we dealing, how much of a problem is the, money is free speech issue for us to try to, in dealing with this situation?
It really isn't. As long as we amend the Constitution, that's the Oregon Constitution, that's why we have Petition 8 on the streets right now. It's a one-sentence amendment to the Oregon Constitution that would overturn the 1997 Oregon Supreme Court decision. saying that Oregon Constitution does not allow any limits. The U.S. Constitution and the First Amendment do allow limits, and the Supreme Court has consistently upheld them.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing we need to do is submit enough signatures for Petition 8 by July 7th, and we need everybody's help to get ourselves over the top by July 7th. If I could make a pitch here for folks to call in or go to the website to get our petitions, the phone number is 800-939-8011. It's 800-939-8011. The website where you can even download and print the petitions is www.fairelections.net. That's one word, Fair Elections, FairElections.net. And we are collecting signatures both on the amendment, Petition 8, and a comprehensive statute, Petition 37, that basically puts back into place what Oregon voters overwhelmingly enacted in 1994, mm-hmm. but was struck down by the Oregon Supreme Court in 1997. Since we add a few more, we add a couple of additional innovations to it. Because we know that limits on contributions can result in unlimited and massive spending by independent expenditure campaigns, we also ban independent expenditures for and against candidates by corporations or unions. These kinds of bans have also been upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. We limit individual independent expenditures for or against a candidate to $10,000 per year. We also place limits on use of personal wealth by candidates, so you don't just have rich folks go out there and run. On the federal level, that's what's happened. Basically, the U.S. Senate has become a millionaire's club.
Mm-hmm.
You may recall when Gordon Smith successfully ran for the Senate, he won by spending $2 million of his own money,
He
defeated Tom Brugger, who spent only $1 million of his money. Someone who had not been involved in politics at all, but was able to obtain the Democratic nomination by committing a large amount of his own money to obtaining it. We also require, if there's independent expenditures, we also require extensive disclosures in the ads. So you won't hear ads that are simply brought to you by the Good for Oregon Committee.
Mm-hmm.
They have to disclose who's providing their money, their primary businesses those folks are engaged in, and we have specific requirements on how long that has to remain on the screen so that you'll know that the ads are coming from the banks or the utilities or the timber companies or whomever is actually paying for them. And we think that will make those sorts of ads far more informative to the people who are hearing them.
And it's obviously such a problem during the whole question around public power. I mean, some of the things that came out over television were, there was no way you could readily tell that this was being put on by PGE or Enron.
Oh, sure. They never identify themselves. These petitions are endorsed by a wide variety of groups, mostly on the progressive side. We haven't managed to persuade any Republican organizations to endorse this yet, but it's endorsed by the Oregon Sierra Club, Alliance for Democracy, of course, the Pacific Green Party, and by the Clackamas County Democratic Party. That's the only party committee that has hosted a debate. I debated the head of the executive director of the Democratic Party of Oregon, Neil Pender. The Democratic, he argued against our measures. I argued for them. And after hearing both of us, the Clackamas County Democratic Party voted overwhelmingly to endorse both of our measures. We're also supported by Osberg and a variety of other progressive organizations.
Now, so there are groups out there that would be allowed to spend unlimited amounts, you were saying.
Well, another one of the innovations is something we borrowed from a measure that was adopted in Colorado in 2002, and that's called the Small Donor Committee. And by the way, with that in effect, in 2004, the Democrats took over both houses of the Colorado legislature. The feature is that a political committee that limits itself to accepting only contributions from individuals and only in amounts of $50 or less per year can then use those aggregated funds in any way they want. So they could use them to support a single candidate if they wished, or to support a slate of candidates, to take out to do their own independent expenditure campaigns, whatever they want. So it's a way of encouraging small d democracy and the pooling together of large numbers of people, each of whom contribute a small amount. People are out there working two jobs, trying to make ends meet. A lot of folks don't have the time to do to do a lot of serious examination of political candidates. They need to rely upon organizations and entities that they trust. So this would allow such organizations, like unions, in particular like unions, like the Sierra Club, like the Alliance for Democracy and others, it would allow people to rely upon them and to make contributions of up to $50 per year to them, to, and they those organizations would then decide which candidates to support or oppose.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's sort of the old people PAC idea, but
that's right.
But it would then also address the concern that unions would be losing some of their political clout under this process, or they perceive they're losing some of their political clout.
Well, we crafted this measure over a period of 6 years with extensive involvement from the unions who attended many of our meetings. And our measure has other features, such as allowing membership organizations, including unions, to transfer up to 40% of their dues to political committees.
Oh, okay.
As long as they notify their membership that they're doing that. They don't need pre-approval. They can notify their membership on their website if they wish. But our measure is actually, would have some papers. The unions have to do some paperwork, and they would have to link their contributions basically. They can use up to 40% of their membership dues for contributions. They can also form small donor committees. Each union local can form its own small donor committee. So it's not just a matter of, you know, the plumbers and steam fitters having one small donor committee. They could have as many as they have locals, plus regional, plus state organizations, plus national organizations. So what we have done is we have tied the ability to make political contributions to the individual.
Right.
And organizations which have large numbers of individuals. And that is what distinguishes, for example, unions and membership organizations like the Sierra Club on the one hand from corporations on the other hand. Corporations don't have members who make voluntary contributions for political purposes. So the corporations would, find all of their contributions banned, like they are already banned in 24 other states.
Okay. We're getting down close to the last few minutes here. For folks just tuning in, this is Dave Mazza for Oregon Issues, and we're talking with Dan Meek and talking about campaign finance reform, and specifically the two ballot measures, initiative petitions that are circulating right now that would help us get a hold on this problem of money in our politics. Are there other features of 37 we haven't covered?
It's pretty comprehensive.
Well, it sounds like you've pretty well nailed down.
We've been working on the language for, you know, about 8 years. We've had assistance from the National Voting Rights Institute and other national organizations and experts. We do push the envelope on some provisions because it's important to do that. If you limit contributions but you don't limit independent expenditures, then you haven't accomplished much, because it just means that the folks, the big corporations, will arrange their own independent expenditures, their own independent ads.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, we got a call that a caller who was asking our engineer what unions were involved in this process and have been supportive.
The folks who came to our meetings and participated were AFL-CIO and the Oregon Education Association. We made several changes to accommodate them over the years. In particular, we even pulled the measure that was on the street, Petition 7, and made changes to it in early 2005 and refiled it as Petition 37. Despite those changes, and despite the fact that they did not object to our measures until after we'd collected over 40,000 signatures on it, they don't support it now. But then again, it appears that it'll not be possible to obtain their support, even on a measure where we have made all of the changes that they requested. You can't just keep pulling the measure off the street over
right.
and over and over. You'll never get anything qualified for the ballot.
Right. Well, let's see. You have to collect how many signatures by July 7th, is it?
July 7th. We need 101,000 valid signatures on the amendment. We need 76,000 valid signatures on the statute.
Mm-hmm.
We are considerably over both of those figures already, but the Secretary of State has adopted new rules and also applies unwritten rules to disqualify large amounts of signatures on you know, bases that we think are invalid. So we need a large cushion. We're basically attempting to collect 50% more on each of the measures than the basic number. So we still need your help. We need you to all good KBOO listeners to get involved and to call the number.
Get that number out again.
800-939-8011 or go to our website, www.fairelections.net. Get petition 37 and get petition 8 and help us get over the top.
Okay. Well, Dan, want to thank you for all the hard work you're doing on this and other issues. It's, you know, you've been slugging it out with the big boys for a long time, and appreciate you coming down today and filling folks in on what's going on with campaign finance reform.
Do we have one more minute, Dave?
Squeeze it in quick here.
The Oregonian wrote a story a couple of days ago that was very misleading about contributions. It said only one initiative campaign names at least 10 individual donors. We provided the Oregonian with our list of over 800 individual donors, wrote a letter to the editor, but of course they haven't printed it.
Incorrect information on the Oregonian. Who would have thunk it? But, it's good to clear that up. So, again, appreciate you coming down. Keep up the good work, and let's hope this time next year we won't have to be talking about campaign finance reform.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
All right. And for all you out in Portland, stay tuned to KBOO for a full day of great programming. This is Dave Mazza, Oregon Issues. You have a good day now.
Good morning. This is the Thursday Morning Radio Zine for Thursday, June 15th. Coming up, it's DIY Portland with Julie Sabatier. Today's show features highlights from the recent village building convergence and interviews with city repair members about reclaiming public spaces. And at 10:30 on Art Focus, Tom Kramer guest hosts with part two of a program with Craig McNichol. At 11 on Democracy Now!, guests include Sarah Rich, mother of Suzanne Swift, the Eugene soldier arrested for refusing to return to Iraq, and Peter Laufer, Vietnam War resister and author of Mission Rejected, U.S. Soldiers Who Say No to Iraq. All that coming up this morning on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.